Welcome on into the Phillies Today podcast. I, of course, am your host, Buzz, and a lot to get to. First of all, Phillies, they finally win a series. Hallelujah. The Phillies have finally won a series in the month of June. First series win in just about 2 weeks, dating back to, you know, the last time they won a series was the Braves series in the last homestand that had that weird doubleheader as a part of it on May the 29th. They got swept by the Brewers. They got lost 2 of 3 in Toronto. They lost all 3 in Pittsburgh, but they actually took 2 of 3 from the Chicago Cubs. Did not realize that was allowed to actually, you know, win series with this team. And listen, there are some pretty big takeaways from this team. I don't think this is a full-blown get me back on track type of series. I think this team clearly, and I mean clearly, has significant holes up and down the roster. I think this team clearly needs more than just a couple of, you know, minor tweaks at the trade deadline. This is a team that's going to struggle if left as currently constructed. I mean, it just is. That there's no way, there's no if, ands, or buts about it, and there's no way around it. This lineup's just not deep enough. I mean, I think you've seen that. I know they scored 7 runs on Wednesday, but top to bottom, hitters you actually feel good about in the lineup. Like, you know, Turner's good, Schwarber's good. Beyond that, Bohm, you know, I know he homered on Wednesday, but generally speaking is like a, you know, 6-4 singles hitter who can't field his position, and he's batting third for a team with World Series hopes. Castellanos is a bad fielder who I know he doesn't make errors, but generally speaking, doesn't hold his position in the field and is a really inconsistent guy at the plate and like does just enough to not be labeled as one of the worst contracts in Philadelphia sports. Max Kepler is just giving you nothing, and he's your 5 hitter. JT Realmuto is giving you nothing at the plate. He's your 6 hitter. Bryson Stott, you know, thank goodness he's been pulled out of the leadoff spot, in particular when righties are on the mound. But even as a 7-hole hitter, like, he might be, he's not your worst hitter on the team, but he's one of your worst hitters on the team, and he just simply does not give you enough at the plate at all. I mean, it feels like he's lucky if he gives you one hit in a given day, and he's taken 4 at bats, just doesn't get on base. I know he works a good at bat. A lot of those pitches are wasted fastballs, frankly. Otto Kemp is, you know, hit 8th, he had a hit. And then Johan Rojas, who is just frankly bunting every time, and the Cubs were lining up as if he was going to bunt every time because he's basically having a pitcher hit. Like, 7 out of 9 guys just don't feel like they are all that good or feel like it should be hitting at the very bottom of a major league lineup right now. So that's the negatives that we'll dive into here on the show. The positives obviously are Jesus Luzardo looked great. He went 6 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, no walks, 10 strikeouts, a 10 strikeout day for Jesus Luzardo. And also for anyone who is into this kind of thing, Rob Friedman, who's Pitching Ninja on Twitter, you know, is kind of like the pitching guru, oftentimes tweets out, you know, videos of different guys' pitches in a given game. You know, he put out a clip on Wednesday during the game of, you know, what Jesus Luzardo's mechanics looked like the last time he was out versus this time. And clearly he was, you know, his hands looked a little bit different. His mechanics looked a little bit different, which might actually speak to, you know, the tipping idea. Might actually speak to, you know, that it doesn't take much to throw something off in the major leagues. Like, it is amazing how much film these guys study and how if someone is tipping in a major league game, how quickly someone will pick up on it. And it might be a, you know, I had Anthony DeBundo on my show on Sunday, and he said a couple of things. Number one is there's various kinds of tipping, right? There's like a sequence tip where you're kind of just throwing the same, you know, let's say you just went fastball, curveball, changeup every single time, and you're always starting a guy off of the fastball, and then always starting, you know, going changeup, and then always going curveball, like you kind of know what's coming. But the more obvious tip is, like, if you're not doing the same thing, if you're not doing the same thing for each kind of pitch, opposing teams are going to pick up on that. If they know that you, you know, that you're not going to throw over when you're about to throw a changeup, and or you do some different kind of motion for whatever reason, you know, they're going to just look to see if you do that one thing. They're going to zone in on that. And if they do, they know it's coming. And that is enough to, in the major leagues, like so much, it really shows you how much of it is just deception and knowing what pitch is coming, and how impressive what pitchers do on a daily basis truly is. Like sequencing at bat after bat after bat after bat after bat. It's what made a guy like Mariano Rivera so freaking good, is that he had one pitch, he just threw a cutter, everyone knew it was coming, and it didn't matter. Now, you only got one at bat off of him per game, and maybe, you know, two in a series, but, you know, overall speaking, it's really hard to pick up on that kind of thing. And if you know what's coming in, you just zone it. Like the entire effect of a changeup or a curveball or anything loses its total effect if you know you don't have to, like, look for a fastball coming, and you just zone in on that, and that's how you get it. And of course, the Phillies did it against Framber Valdez in, you know, game three of the 22 World Series when they hit him around. So it's pretty cool to see. Like, it obviously takes someone in the dugout or someone in the video room to, like, pick up on it and start having those conversations. But the fact that he was not tipping on Wednesday, the fact that he, again, gave you six innings, 99 pitches, bullpen was pretty solid. Max Lazar allowed a run, took 31 pitches. He threw 31 pitches, but he, you know, took down two innings. Michael Mercado took down one inning and 20 pitches. You didn't have to use any of your real guys because you won the game 7-2. You actually won a series. Your bullpen will be fully, fully rested going into this Toronto series this weekend, because you have an off day on Thursday. You didn't have to use any of your guys on Wednesday, off day on Thursday, and then you can kind of reset everything going into a Friday series. So those are kind of the main takeaways from Wednesday's ball game. Tuesday, you know, just looking at the whole series in general, Monday and Tuesday's games were, you know, I thought Monday and Tuesday's games were examples of, like, they won. They did not deserve to win Tuesday, and they didn't. And then Monday, they didn't deserve to win, and they did. And they did so in extra innings. And you're going to have games like that. The good teams all win them. And the craziest thing about all of this, so they're 39-29 as we speak. So that is, what, doing some quick math here, 68 games in the season. And currently they have a winning percentage of 574, which multiplied over 162 equals 93 wins. Like, they're still on pace to win 93 games, but it's the way they're doing it, and the fact that with Bryce Harper out, it's so hard to get behind this lineup. It's so hard to, and the current state of the bullpen also, like, it feels like the pacing is thrown off a little bit. I don't know what's going to happen with Bryce Harper. He's on the 10-day IL, whether he'll actually be back after that, whether if he returns, will his power be what it was? It feels like his power has been very much subdued this season. So, yeah, I worry about the offense. I worry about this team's consistency. It's bizarre to say, but I guess what you could say is they're currently 10 games above. Like, they have 162 minus 68 remaining, 94 games left. If they were to win, of those 98 games left, they were to win a total, 94 games left. If they were to win 47 of those games, if they were to win, yeah, let's say half of those games, and you put that against the 38 they've already won, it'd be, they have 85 wins, or 86 wins, rather. They'd have 86 wins if they played 500 the rest of the way, which, on the one hand, only one win fewer than in 22, but that barely got them in the playoffs. You're going to have to play you know, another 10 games above 500 to really be in contention for the NL East for, or, you know, contention for a real solidified wild card spot. There is just no way around it. And the question is, where are those other, you know, 10 wins above 500 going to come from? I know I believe they're in really good shape based upon where their rotation is. I still believe they're one of, if not the best rotations in all of Major League Baseball. I still believe that they will make the postseason. I saw Tom Kelly on Wednesday doing a show of like, are you confident they'll make the postseason? I still am. I think this team is too good to literally miss the playoffs. Like, I don't think that's really on the table. I think that there are so many other poor teams that in baseball right now that I think to say, I think for someone to suggest or say that they're not going to make the playoffs, I think that's taking it much too far. What I do believe is that they'll get in and then struggle once they get there, that this offense is going to be their downfall again. And it's funny, I was having a conversation with someone yesterday about this, of where they kind of stand right now. And it's like, oh, you mean the same problems that, you know, hurt them last year are going to hurt them again? And I'm like, no, this lineup feels worse than the one that stepped off the field in the NLDS in New York last year. Like, this lineup feels like it has, like I said, seven guys you don't even feel that great about. You have, like, Castellanos, who's okay. You have Bohm, who is sometimes okay, but it's just, like, it's so under his potential. It's ridiculous. Rojas is always bunting. Stott, who stinks at the plate. Like, it's so hit or miss with, like, more than two-thirds of the lineup. I don't think that's a sustainable way to win in this league, and it's certainly not in the postseason. You can have the backs your pitchers all you want. You could add, you could build the super team of all super teams in terms of pitching. You could you know, throw Skubal in there. You could throw Paul Skeens in there. You could throw whoever you want in there. There's just no way that, like, there's just no way I could sit here and confidently say that they're going to go into the playoffs and I feel good about it. Unless they add a couple of impact bats, honestly, less so the relievers. I've been on this for a while. Like, if you're in the Phillies' position, you're Dave Dombrowski. Your main target needs to be the offense because of what this lineup looks like right now, in particular without Bryce. At least when Harper's in there, it gives you a little bit more length. But when he's not, it's a struggle. And you take the flip side of that, which is that you will get reinforcements on the pitching side. You could add Painter, you could add Ranger, you could add McAble, you could add, you know, maybe it's Christopher Sanchez or someone from the rotation. There's going to be an overflow there. There's not going to be an overflow. In fact, there's an underflow, if that's a word, of hitters right now. And there's just no, there's just no way. There's absolutely no way that you could ever justify to me that this team as currently constructed is good enough. You know, I know the optimist will sit there and tell you what they've accomplished and that they're good, and you look at the odds, it's kind of crazy. They still have the fifth best odds to win the World Series in all of Major League Baseball. Those odds really haven't moved. But at the end of the day, this team needs to get a lot better. So those are my takeaways kind of from where this team is at right now. Looking ahead to the weekend, so you got three games with Toronto. First time, here's a little weird quirk. First time the Phillies are home on Father's Day in 8 years, rather, since 2017. Kind of a wild statistic there. But so Friday, June 13th, you have Kevin Gausman versus Ranger Suarez. You on Saturday, June the 14th, 4:05 game, Bowden Francis versus Christopher Sanchez. And then on Sunday, the Father's Day matchup, Jose Berrios, Zach Wheeler. Sunday, you know, does feel like the biggest matchup of the three there. Again, try and win the series. It sounds so basic and elementary, but it feels like they should be able to win one of those two. Off the back of Sanchez or off the back of Ranger, and then You feel good anytime Zach Wheeler's on the mound. He is truly, just as a side note, WIP is doing their top 11 athletes at the moment, and I'll have my my list out on Twitter in the coming days. The top 11 athletes in Philadelphia sports right now, I think Saquon's one, Jordan Mailata's probably two, but I think Zach Wheeler's got to be like number three at the worst. He is. I've heard debates of like so-and-so versus Bryce or so-and-so versus, Elliot and Ike had an argument yesterday of like it was Bryce and Joel Embiid. And Embiid's kind of a tough guy to rank right now because of the injuries. But when you look at what Zach Wheeler's accomplished, like I don't know if there's anyone in Philadelphia sports better at what their position is or better what their job is than Zach Wheeler is. Like that guy's a top three pitcher in Major League Baseball. He is just a flat out stud. And I don't know if you can, Bryce Harper's not a top three hitter. Schwarber's not a top three hitter. Saquon's a top, the number one running back. So he goes at number one and an impact player. Mailata is, probably going to be my number two at left tackle. But beyond that, I don't know if there's anyone, after that better at what they individually do. Than Zach Wheeler. Again, I think he's in the top three. I think he's going to be a Cy Young candidate again. It's going to be like him and Skeens. His ability to keep hitters off balance, he it was such a freak outing he had in the same outing as the Lizardo thing. But he just so rarely has horrendous outings. He is worth every penny of his contract. He is the Phillies' best player right now, I think, bar none. And so I think he's going to come in at number three. Other guys I'm going to have on the list, I think I'm going to have Bryce Harper somewhere in the six range, Kyle Schwarber somewhere in the nine range. I think this Phillies team only has three guys on that list at the moment. I don't think that there's much. I think I'm going to have one sixer in Embiid at the bottom end of the list. I think the Eagles have deserved to have seven spots on this list. Eagles have seven, Phillies have three, Sixers have one, Flyers, this isn't a ignoring the hockey in the city type thing. They just don't have someone in the top 11 at the moment. So I think it's pretty, I think it's pretty notable to say that they have three, but then the drop off after, the only other person you could consider, maybe Turner, Sanchez, Ranger, they're good. Lizardo, if he didn't have those two really, really crappy starts. But overall, I think I'm going with three. So I would love to hear people's reactions on that. I'll tweet out the list if you want to engage with it there in the comments of this podcast. I'm sure we'll be talking about it plenty on the air in the coming days. So really looking forward to a lot of top 11 discourse and top 11 stuff. So looking forward to all of that. Again, Philly's got three against the Blue Jays this weekend. Also should be noted, weird scheduling quirk that allows for them to play the Blue Jays six total games in a season. Only as of, I believe, last year or this year, where they officially went to this new interleague rivalry system. In fact, I think it was this year, where they've had the interleague rivals for a while, but this is the first time that you're guaranteed to play them six times every single year. They've actually added two more interleague games, pulling away from two National League Central / West games. So the Phillies, for the foreseeable future going forward, going to play the Blue Jays every year. Bit of a weird interleague rival, if you will, given that they're north of the border. They don't really have a natural rival. There's the Red Sox in like even years for a while there. They've gotten matched up with the Braves. So for now, they're always going to be a rematch, six-game rematch over the course of two different series, three in Toronto, three at CBP, every single year for, a rematch of the 1993 World Series. And, there's really not much else to that rivalry other than that, but that's kind of what it all stems from, I guess you could say. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Phillies Today podcast. Always check back here for my counterparts, Francisco Rojas and Justin Morgenstein. Until then, I'll be back with you guys next week for more brand new and more episodes of the Phillies Today podcast. Thanks for tuning in.